Welcome, Register Readers, to episode 9 of Open Season. We've got Matt Acey from Alfresco and Dave Rosenberg from MuleSource. And we've also got a new guest on the show, Dave McAllister, who's joining
us. Newest prima donna.
From Adobe. And thank you, gentlemen, for popping on the call. I guess we should get started real quick. I blame Matt for this, but in the last episode, we claimed that Tamarind was the only Michelin-starred Indian restaurant in England, in London. As it turns out, there's another one. I don't know how to pronounce it, though. It's Benares, maybe, on Berkeley Square, and it's started by the chef that started Tamarind, and they also have a Michelin star, so we should correct that.
I feel... Well, what you didn't say is that it was spawned by the chef at Tamarind.
That's what I just said.
Oh, I wasn't listening to you.
it's that deadpan delivery that we're hearing so much about, Ashley.
I guess so. Oh, dear. So anyway, most of the comments and emails from last week were about us making a mistake on that. So I wanted to set the record straight, and I think someone offered me a free meal there, so I will take them up on that.
Nice.
Very
nice.
I'm in London. And then I guess also, maybe Mr. McAllister, could you give people a little background on what you do at Adobe? I guess that'll be helpful just to set the stage a bit.
Oh, geez. Oh, gosh. Let's see. I get to run a split brain problem. I deal with standards on one hand, which are slow, consensus-driven, and don't change very frequently, and seldom innovate. While at the same time, I get to deal with open source across a large conglomerate of business units to try to help them understand that open source doesn't hurt, that it can help, and that there is no need to be a paranoid large company these days.
Yeah, I guess.
Now, the nice thing is we've actually accomplished most of those things. The problem now is making sure that we don't backtrack.
Right, because at least for me, I don't think Adobe pops to mind as like the biggest open source company, and I guess that probably holds true for other people listening to this call. I mean, can you give us just a feel for what Adobe does in the open source world?
Sure. Literally, I joined here December of 2006. November of 2006, we launched our Tamarin, named after a small monkey, which was a virtual machine we provided off to the Mozilla Foundation for running the ECMAScript, JavaScript, ActionScript, JScript model targeted for the next generation Firefox. Literally back in 2006, we open sourced the Spry frameworks and made them available. In 2003, we opened a pure research project on into basically what's called generic programming, which continues to this day and puts out a new update every month on libraries for C++ that allow people to do either generic image libraries or basically source programming levels. But starting in 2007, we launched that the Flex SDK, one of our development languages, will be available in open source under the Mozilla Public License. We then followed that by connecting the Flex Ajax bridge out to a similar functionality and made that also open source. We followed that with the Flex Ajax video to allow people in the Ajax land to bring in Flash videos into their applications. We most recently launched a product called Blaze DS to bring the distributed remote messaging constructs to open source under the LGPL, current version 3. And then we did an update for Tamarin, that virtual machine, back a year ago to target a full open source virtual machine into the mobile and distributed space. And then, so we've been a little bit busy.
Yeah, you guys have been. And then you're here today to announce that Creative Suite 4 will be GPL'd, right?
No.
starting out on Linux. Only available on Linux.
I have to admit, one of the major accomplishments that we did accomplish from the little open source community inside of Adobe is that going forward, our free clients, such as PDF Reader, such as the Flash Player, and once we release it, the AIR products will all be simultaneously available on Windows, Macintosh, and Linux. So the Linux guys are now first-class citizens. That is a major change, and you would not have believed the uphill battle that we fought to get them to realize that Linux on the desktop is happening and happening soon.
Yeah, no, that's good to hear. Matt, I didn't know if you wanted to – did you have some, like, Adobe-specific questions?
No, although it would be good to have Adobe continue to get deeper and deeper into open source, given that, I mean, if you look at the competitive landscape, Microsoft's got to be sitting – I mean, if I'm Adobe, the company that I look at across the aisle is Microsoft. And, I mean, what's the biggest lever that could be used against Microsoft to me, or one of the biggest, is open source part of it? And maybe the second would be software as a service. So AIR, to me – that could be the foundation for a lot of cool things, both with regard to open source and with regard to software as a service. It would be really cool to see that. I'm not sure if Adobe's planning on anything like that, and Dave surely wouldn't be able to tell us if it were. But that just seems like a ripe opportunity.
Yeah, well, let me actually expand on it a little bit. Adobe as a company has had openness literally since 1983 when it took the original PostScript spec out. In 1993 when it promoted and released all of its patent holes on PDF. And then AIR itself actually has a number of open source pieces inside of it. WebKit inside of it, the Tamarin project we mentioned here, SQLite for its database product set. So we recognize that open source has allowed us to leverage this model. But once it gets developed, then we'll start taking a look at the best way to apply this to a developer community. It's one of those mindsets that don't change in big companies rapidly, is that developing a single stable platform is sometimes easier if the company feels it's in control. And so let us get it out to version 1.0, and then I'll start working. How's that?
I had a question for you. I mean, what does Adobe internally make of the GIMP project?
I should point you off to the executive vice president's blog on that. There are some really cool features. We think that GIMP is an interesting aspect of an open source development tool, but it's not what we find our design level people want to do. Most of our work that we see people really pushing for open source is developer based, not designer based. When we actually do go through and poll the company, the people that buy things like Photoshop and so forth, we ask them if they've looked at the GIMP. They quite often have looked at the GIMP. Some of them even tried using it, and they usually come back to it, to us. There's just so many moving parts in a project like that, and the user interface is the all-important element of a design tool. Developers are willing to live with a lot to get to drive and build cool things, but designers just want the tool to get out of their way.
Oh, that's fair enough. Dave, did you have any questions for the other Dave before we kind of jump into the regular show?
I was just looking for the Adobe blogs because they're not they're not very well designed. they're just not really visible. It took me like 7 clicks into the website to find these things. I was just wondering how seriously they take this. But John Knack has 890 entries, and I've never even heard of him.
Yeah, so remember that in general, Adobe is a newcomer to this open source world.
Especially blogging is, but the Adobe is old school media, right? They should be taking advantage of this.
Well, you can find mine under blogs.adobe.com/open.
All right.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. And I try not to pick sides too often. I'm trying to be fairly above board.
Yeah, that's why these things are not that well known.
I was going to say, that is the unfortunate part, is Dave doesn't take shots at anybody. But you can't really do it with a big company. It's unfortunate, but but true.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. And, you know, somebody was saying earlier, I think, that they spent the week talking to lawyers or to analysts.
That was me.
I can fake being a lawyer with the best of the lawyers. I talk to them so often.
Well, someday you'll have freedom and your cat will be able to do whatever it wants to do.
His cat has been meowing through this call, unless that's a sound on your computer.
That's actually the sound on my cell phone.
Okay.
No one ever mistakes my cell phone.
Dave might be a crazy cat guy. I'm not convinced he isn't.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys should at least have a kind of anti-Microsoft blog, right?
That would be fun, but at least I don't roost for Arsenal. So let's keep that in mind.
Oh, my God.
He doesn't even have that to redeem him.
The two of you and your soccer.
Actually, as we talk about we look at our show notes, let's discuss some of the blog things, including the fact that we were accused of being monotone, which hurts, of course, and I blame Matt for that.
More importantly, Dave,
I am never monotone.
Dave, we should do a little context on that. I mean, you did a post on this new program. You know, why don't you tell it, this new Microsoft?
Well, the Microsoft Open Value subscription, which is none of the above.
Right.
So they call it that, but really what it is it's buying Microsoft products as normal. But then I got weird comments, and there's a guy who comments a lot on all the CNET stuff who said that he thinks that it's an astroturfing campaign, that Microsoft is pulling a Novell, as Roy Shestowitz likes to claim that Novell is paying commenters to somebody who's claiming that Microsoft is doing the same thing, which I think is pretty interesting, and I hope it's true because I need the readership.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'll put a link into that post. The commenter's name, it was Papa Chongo, and he charges Microsoft with astroturfing at the bottom of...
Which is pretty funny and kind of interesting. I never even thought about it. That's how dumb I am.
But then he said the three of us, although I give him credit for liking the show, but he said we're monotone. I just always thought, especially with Matt.
All right, let's go!
My friends, I come before you in the fullness of time to bring you the word.
Just a second. That's Sunday.
I think, since our last show, I guess the biggest kind of public news was Red Hat changing CEOs. I saw, Matt, you kind of wrote about it. I don't know the new CEO. Obviously, he comes from the airline industry, so I don't know. Yeah,
he was actually – so I took issue with – not that it matters. I mean, who am I to comment on it, but I did anyway. I took issue with the selection at first, and then I had the chance to speak with – Mr. Whitehurst, Jim Whitehurst, like on the third or something like that, and he's a fantastic guy. I mean, I can't imagine that there are that many evangelical type open source people out there that also are, you know, buttoned up executors like he is. I think he's going to be really good for Red Hat. I when I first saw the news, I thought this is, you know, Matthew Zulo, because he's always liked going the contrarian route and pulling in. I think he's got some, like, what's that, Coates company? Charlie Peters or whoever, I think, is from, like, Burlington Coat Factory or something like that. And he's turned out well. And
but they were a big Linux shop, so that one wasn't that hard to figure out.
They were
out.
One of the first.
Yeah, but, you know,
they were the guys that was showing the example in 97.
Yeah, so maybe there's something there. But it turns out that Jim Whitehurst he's a geek. I mean, he was serious. I asked him if he... what he has on his iPod, and he says, I don't use an iPod because it won't play Og Vorbis.
Hyperbole, I tell
Dave,
you.
Dave, I pushed him on it. He was serious. It was shocking. No. I mean,
I like the idea of this guy. I definitely do. I think, but the problem over there is not – I didn't think the problem was the leadership. It was it's the culture, right, generally speaking. And then the other interesting thing I thought was he came out like all guns a-blazing against Oracle and everything else, and then I think they've already changed that whole tack too. So I think he's going to have a bit of an uphill battle just to get culturally to get ingrained there and get those guys all going in the same direction.
Matt, how'd you end up interviewing him as like a CNET hacker just because?
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Did they come to you or did you go to them? That's the question.
Well,
have
when
you
I
reached that level, are you Robert Scoble? The ACIzer?
When I posted my first thing on it, their PR team pinged me and said, we'd like to give you a chance to talk with Jim.
Look at that.
I wouldn't have been presumptuous enough to think that I mattered, and I wouldn't have asked them, but they asked me, and I was really happy to do it. And I take your points, Dave. I think he's going to be really good for Red Hat.
Yeah, well, good.
It's interesting, though, at the same time, and I don't want to make too much of this, but that Novell's Joe LaSala, their general counsel, took off just this past week. What's funny is that Discovery Communications, the company that he went to, announced it well before Novell did. I don't know why they were holding on to that news, but for Joe, he's a good guy, and it's a great move for him. But you do kind of wonder if he just got sick of having so much to do, because Novell is, in some ways, with the Microsoft deals, kind of a law firm of sorts, and they're spending all this time on SCO. I'm betting he wanted to get back to just a normal life of being a general counsel at a great company like Discovery. So we shall see.
Interesting. You'll be getting a call from the Novell PR department for discussing that.
I was careful to be polite.
Does anyone know the backstory on, why Matt said there were kind of health reasons for him leaving the CEO post, but he didn't say if they were his health reasons or something?
It's his wife has been ill, seriously ill, for some time, and it's something that comes and goes. So it's real. I'm just surprised it didn't happen a lot sooner.
I think we just lost the other Dave, Adobe Dave.
No, I'm here. It was the cat.
Wait. Meow. So wait, that was a monotone meow. We got to get a better meow. Meow.
Yeah, I think for Red Hat, I don't know if I totally agree with you, Dave. I think they have execution issues, so this could be good.
Well, I mean, probably it's a little bit of both, but I mean, it's a pretty rough place, I think, in terms of having to, considering the JBoss, that didn't go that great, but that's like a really, really ultra geek driven company. It's not so much like the Google geeks. It's like the hardcore kernel hackers who really have no desire ever to make money. And I just think it's a challenge over there. So they have to get that aligned. And that was what Zulik was really holding together.
Right.
But we'll see what happens. I wish, we need them to be successful. We've said it before, but we all need them to remain successful in order for the rest of us to be able to draft off their coattails.
Well, it's kind of interesting when you look at this. What you just described is that Red Hat was a geek community who really didn't understand service, but they've been selling service. And the CEO they brought in sells in a service industry. So he may be able to help sort of bridge some of those gaps. But the inside scoop from some of the Red Hat guys from the old days are they don't know what to make of him yet. So, Matt, you may have had a chance to interview him, but unfortunately I don't think the employees at Red Hat have had that equal opportunity to interview him.
Well, it's only, I think that's a good point, actually.
It's only fair, too. I mean, it happened all over the holidays, so I'm sure it'll take a little time to shake out. How close is Adobe's relationship with Red Hat?
We support products on top of the Red Hat product offerings, and that's about as close as it gets. We're actually far closer to people in Ubuntu and Gentoo space than we are to Red Hat or to Novell product sets.
So does that mean with someone like Ubuntu, you might look at kind of longer term projects you can do together? It's just building better support, or
it's right now it's a combination of two things. Our developers love Ubuntu and Gentoo far more than they like any of the other products. We like it because those products are actually innovative on the desktop. And it would be interesting at some point for us to spend more time talking to them about ways that we could jointly drive things to the marketplace. Again, we get back to this is a big company and it doesn't necessarily cross all the routes yet. And when we spend all that lovely time looking at license hell, we have to be somewhat sensitive to how fast we can move.
Right. That makes sense. I guess there's another little bit of shake up in the open source world. It looks like Mitch Kapoor is going to be pulling funding from the Chandler open source PIM project. And I mean, just based on a couple of blogs that are out there, it looks like Chandler's really struggling along. Like 6 years ago,
you
got a ton of attention.
Didn't you?
Yeah,
I did. Make it work.
I did try to install it today. I don't think I would commit too much time to using it based on what I saw.
That's the big thing, isn't it? I mean, why didn't Mitch drop it 5 years ago? I mean, it hasn't really gone anywhere in the 6 years that it's been in existence. And I think in part that's just the nature of it. I mean, it's kind of sort of this open source thing, and yet nobody outside of that small insular community is really involved with it. I think it was kind of doomed to fail from the start.
Yeah, you had none of the big like quasi email vendors like a whoever, even a Scalix or anybody adopt it. You didn't have a big company like, you know, an Adobe could have taken this and made something out of it as an example. But I mean, who cares? This is the problem, right?
Yeah, and that's actually the viewpoint of I used to work in the venture capitals of the world and do a lot of due diligence. We couldn't find anybody when Mitch talked to us who cared.
Yeah.
You know, this was a case of either they were perfectly happy with what they already had or they didn't care to ever have it.
Yeah, and they missed the boat. I mean, the CrackBerry basically took over the world on this point. And this was like still when Palm mattered, I would say. This is when they started this. Remember that?
Palm? I don't remember. Palm?
Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, I just saw that the former CEO of Palm, Pat McVeigh, is now CEO of Sooner, and they just raised a round from Cisco, of all companies, which was kind of bizarre. Like a B round from Cisco.
That's right. You used to work with Pat in a former life.
I did, yeah.
I met him just the once.
Yeah, he's a big, affable man. Very nice. It was just kind of – it's interesting sort of, you know, I think interesting that Cisco decided to invest in that kind of company is sort of cool.
Yeah, Dave, you said you had some takeaways from where did you do all these meetings with these analysts and
we decided this is not going to come out until Tuesday, right?
Sure.
We're making that commitment together.
We can do that.
So we have new product releases coming out next week, and including in the SOA world, there's, you know, you basically have an ESB and you've got BPM and all this other kind of crap, and you have registry and governance. And so we're coming out with the first open source SOA governance platform, including a registry and repository. And it's kind of an undefined market, and it's like you basically only have SysNet and SysNet. And it's real strange when you look at the vendor landscape. Everyone OEMs the SysNet product, and then they charge you like $300,000 even to get it, just to get the licensing. And so we went to the analysts and said, you know, this is what we're thinking about doing. Do you guys think we're right, wrong, or indifferent? And they were shockingly helpful. Burton, Gartner, Forrester, all these guys were hugely helpful, not only in just sort of, you know, us briefing them on what we were thinking about, but actually giving us feedback as to how to make the product better without paying them, for the record. So pretty helpful. I mean, so we talked to everybody. The Red Monk guys are always real helpful to us. But as I said, Burton, Gartner, Forrester, we talked to Nucleus, we talked to the whole boat, and we got a lot of really good help, which I think is interesting. I think that the analysts are starting to take open source a lot more seriously, and also they're starting to want to root for open source companies against these big vendors.
You know what? We've at Alfresco, we've seen the same thing, and it's actually, so spinning that in a slightly bigger way. You see that Fortune article with
What the hell? How about that? Huh?
Yeah, it is what it is. I mean, he's arbitrarily picked out.
Wait, can you tell people
companies.
What it is?
Oh, so what's his name? Copeland over at Fortune wrote this article saying, you know, here are the top IPOs to watch for in 2008. And I think shockingly, three of them were open source. So he listed Ingress, MySQL, and SugarCRM. And then there was also one other company, Exactware or something like that, and then Parallels. And it's really surprising. I mean, there are other companies out there like Endeca, I'm assuming will go public this year. They're doing $100 million or so in revenue, and there are others. But he chose those five, and I think it's pretty telling that three of them were open source. And as to my knowledge, he's not like an open source bigot or anything like that would lead him to talk about open source exclusively. But that's pretty impressive. And I think it kind of – I won't say that it puts to rest the talk over the years that open source isn't a viable business model or can't be a viable business model, there's no money in it, or the money's not that big. Specifically you, Savio, who says that on a routine basis. I'm hoping that this will happen. I am actually not – I mean, in the 451's analysis of it, they pointed out that Sugar's did about – and this is, according to Reuters, did about $15 million in 2007 – assuming that's the case, they're not going public in 2008. But putting that aside, it's pretty cool to see open source being taken seriously by a magazine like Fortune that makes its money selling to people, to Wall Streeters and whatnot. So,
I agree. I was pretty shocked and obviously pretty happy with the whole thing. But MySQL is kind of obvious. I Ingress is doing a pretty significant chunk of change as well. Which, to be perfectly honest, I'm not sure how they got that revenue stream, and I'm friends with those guys, and I still can't quite figure out.
Well, remember they have CA. a Yeah, remember they have a legacy business. The interesting there is that they're actually growing now.
Yeah, they're growing really well, actually. They acquired a company, an SI in the UK and an SI in Australia, and they're really pumping stuff through there. So that's impressive. I don't think Sugar is doing even 15 million, but I don't know. But nonetheless, it's interesting just to see that these things are now more on the radar than all these crappy SaaS companies, despite the fact that SaaS seems like such a good answer to all of life's problems.
Dave, I mean, from Adobe's...
SaaS is an answer to a problem, but it's not the answer to all the problems. Sorry, the sound in the background was me beating my head against the wall.
No, I was just curious, Dave, if there's any open source companies out there that, you know, if you had kind of a short list of interesting vendors that you're keeping an eye on.
There are. Suddenly can't talk all of a sudden here. We actually have been looking at a couple of just interesting players. I can't even remember if they're open source or not. But the SaaS thing, for instance, there's a company called EditGrid. Just got a round of financing, I believe.
Yeah, I know those guys.
They're one of those that you have to ask what question are you really answering here. But if you're answering the question that comes out and says, I really need to collaborate in working on financial models, they've got the answer, which is actually really cool. We did acquire Buzzword. It wasn't open source, but it's in that SaaS category once again. Adobe definitely has the belief that SaaS is an up-and-coming market space. We think that it's going to be one of the things that will drive revenue going forward. I will also tell you that I look at the acquisitions in the open source space, and I'm still not sure where those valuation numbers are coming from.
I had this conversation with a guy from an iBank today, actually, and really, you know, it's the bet on the sort of like, what do you do? Like, how would anyone else get the customer numbers and the customers that Alfresco got, as an example? Like, there's no way that a company could swoop in and somehow get 200 customers in 1 year. And so, you know, you're betting obviously on further monetization, but I think it makes sense to me. I mean, 46 times, yes, a little bit high. I still think JBoss was overpaid for, but not by much. You know, maybe by 20%. But who cares at that point? Because now everyone who has JBoss and any continued growth is going to be dominated by Red Hat.
I think there's a lot that proprietary software companies, and maybe Adobe doesn't fall into this, because I do think that Adobe has lowered the bar, kind of like Microsoft has actually, lowered the bar to adopting new technology. And so maybe Adobe doesn't have as much to learn from open source as some other companies do. But you look at, so Dave called out Alfresco, but the same would be true of MuleSource, of Sugar, of Zimbra. The cost of acquisition of a new company, our competitors, Documentum and whatnot, they aren't really out there aggressively getting new customers. They're selling into existing customers. They're doing like an Oracle. They're consolidating and whatnot, but they're not actually out there acquiring new customers, not in the sort of numbers that we're doing. And we have the founder of Documentum who saw what they did, and we've done more customers in 2 years than it took them, I think it was something like 8 years to acquire.
Yeah.
And you just can't do that with a proprietary model where you force the person to go through. They have to put this, whether it's $500,000 or $1 million or whatever up front, where they can't touch and feel and use the software until they've paid. That's a losing model going forward, I think.
You see that changing in proprietary companies, for instance. Using Adobe, even though Air is not out, it will never be a cost item. But you could have downloaded Air, I think, 6 months ago and started working with it, which is the rich internet application, the Adobe integrated runtime model to get you away from just having to deal with browsers, but not having to go to the heavyweight model of a desktop app. So the model works, but the companies that you've just brought up and mentioned, all of them have predecessors in the market in a proprietary space. So buying a company into a space is actually buying into the space. And there may be some valuations and drive some valuations inside of that space here. But if you are developing the space and developing a currency model at the same time for that space, quite often you run into the instability of an open source solution actually hampers your aggressiveness into that.
What's an example of that, though?
Yeah. think back into 97, 98. Everybody was talking about Linux, 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 Linux. Go to any Linux users group and say, what's your favorite distribution? And the poor newcomer that walked into that argument was out of his depth. Had no clue. So,
yeah, but I'm not sure. I'm not sure I see the relationship, because I just think of it as, how could I possibly? So, for example, using my registry stuff, my only real option is to have Sysinet, which is $400,000 or whatever. So let's say a SIG argument is $250,000. These vendors have encouraged software to remain this rich man's sport. And so, you know, if you use SOA, that's relatively new. I think the Air thing is an interesting example, because there's nothing else like it, right? So how would you possibly get it out there if you're just going to charge for it? But I'm just not sure.
And that's what I'm saying. I believe that the model of free and open will help you develop a new marketplace. But I actually, going back to the original valuation marketplaces, the companies you're talking about, Ingress, I worked for Ingress back in the late 80s, and we did do some reviews of that when we were at Warburg Pincus. Even Sugar, even Alfresco, they can all point to a proprietary vendor in the space. So how fast you develop a market customer base to which you achieve revenue seems to be in some senses tied to the existence of a proprietary company for you to actually take share from.
I see what you're saying. But although, you know what? So I would point to companies like LoopFuse that are, I think, creating and innovating new spaces, new markets. And whether you're on the Eloqua side, so Eloqua is the big proprietary vendor in the space, but they're a SaaS model, and or LoopFuse on the open source side, open source plus SaaS, I think that low cost of entry, I mean, I think it can, I take your point. I mean, it does, it is a harder task if you are creating a new market, but that's the case whether you're doing it with proprietary or open source.
How about like a Zamanda? Like a Zamanda just started offering the backup to Amazon S3, which I think is pretty cool.
Right, but think about it. When the Zamanda started.
Well, yeah. So who cares? It's a crappy backup, right? Backup is boring. But nonetheless, I mean, you know, this is still innovating on a new business model that doesn't exist. So
right, backup is only boring when you've never had a crash.
Right, exactly. No, I mean, I actually think it's pretty valuable, and I even like the product. But I just think that there's innovation is going to occur sort of outside, no matter what. But
I'm not attacking innovation. Very honestly, I agree that the innovation model that was condemned at open source in the late 90s doesn't exist. Open source, free software, SaaS all create innovation. However, one of the comments that we were talking about in the valuation space is the number of customers you can attract in a set of time. And my argument is that valuations by customer attraction is driven somewhat by an understanding of the marketplace. The understanding of that marketplace to date has been driven by usually a proprietary vendor in that space being accepted to a large company base or to a large customer base. Yeah. And it may change.
Yeah, it makes sense.
It may change. Yeah. SaaS may change that model place, but the number of, and I'm going to use this phrase deliberately, the number of eyeballs who click through your website is based on the number of people who recognize what you're doing.
Yeah.
Sure.
I agree. Fine.
Just look at
that was my old VC background coming into it. That was
my old VC background. You talked your way out of it, Dave. It's fine. You got through it.
Look at what Citrix paid for ZenSource. I mean, that was all based on VMware's, you know, mining the market, because ZenSource doesn't have anywhere near the number of customers.
Yeah, which is an interesting point. Wouldn't you have loved to have had less than $1 million in revenue and gotten a $500 million valuation?
We all screwed that up, didn't we, Matt?
I'll take that in a heartbeat.
Well, Matt, according
turn down the job there, darn it.
According to Linux Magazine, Alfresco may be in line for just such a deal. They said that
Can we talk about that for a quick second, about that Linux Magazine, how they made it impossible to read that article, that I have to click 20 times to find their 20 companies?
And to make sure that they made a lot of money on that so that they would put Alfresco in again, I clicked on every ad in every single one of those pages.
I got to tell you that is a major failing that I couldn't get. I had like 20 tabs open in the browser. It was annoying as hell. Poorly done. It was a pathetic attempt for page views.
It is a little annoying, and you know what? All those our PR team didn't actually talk with them, so it was a surprise to us. But a lot of those things are just, you know, whoever's PR team happens to be talking with an author on a given day.
Oh, you don't think that the open source interoperability is an issue? You don't think that Coverity verifying that 11 products are secure? It's a bunch of crap.
Yeah, no, point taken. But the thing that I thought was interesting with that was not the open source companies that the easy answers, whether you think it's Alfresco, whether you think it's MuleSource, whether you think it's Sugar or MySQL, those are easy to say these are the top open source, or easy for a magazine like Linux Magazine to come up with. But the other ones that they came up with, I thought were kind of interesting. Putting Google there and Yahoo, and was Adobe on that list? I can't remember.
No, Adobe was not. We made the CNET list, but we didn't make Linux Magazine's list.
But that's
how is that interesting? That's trite. It's obvious.
It's not. It's not obvious for what I would say a magazine like Linux Magazine, because I think they have tended to be somewhat, I don't want to say stodgy, but conservative in their view of open source. I mean, frankly, I'm a conservative open source person. So when I saw the list that they had, I thought, oh, wow, that's kind of interesting. Those are not the companies I would have thought as open source companies. But I mean, it kind of goes to Chris Anderson of Wired. And I know this will make Ashley.
Everybody's puking in
both
their own
puke and
right
blush
here
at the same time.
more puke, less blush.
But in that interview I did with him, I thought it was kind of interesting. I don't know if he's right, but he said the conversation around open source is eventually just going to be about the web. It's going to be about software as a service. And again, I don't know if that's true. Personally, it shouldn't be true for at least a few years until Alfresco goes public or something like that. Then it can be true all you want. But it better
not be true until there's T1 bandwidth to my flights across the country and across the
world. Yeah, right, exactly.
point taken. But I think the point that he was making, and maybe that Linux Magazine, which I thought was a surprising point for Linux Magazine in particular to make, is that the open source world is not just people like Sugar that peddle bits. It's this service world that's made up of a lot of open source bits that don't actually, you know, they don't make their money from the open source software directly or just indirectly as they, you know, advertisements and whatnot. I thought it was interesting. But.
Yeah, well, you know, along those lines, can anyone on this August panel come up with a company that isn't in a hybrid state already?
Oh, dear.
You know, Adobe is certainly a hybrid company. We ship on things, we ship with things, we build things, we donate things. I can't come up with a large company that doesn't make use of open source. So why would you pick a certain large company to do this? In spite of the fact that they managed to gut part of GPL v3 because of their size, what's the reasoning behind that?
Usually.
Yay, I stumped the panel. Yay.
Yeah.
We're all trying. You can hear our brains creaking.
I'm not sure I'm that smart.
Matt,
I'll just go look at Dig. Hey, how did R2-D2 get his name? That's more important than this. Anyway, this is more important than this.
Matt, come on, Twitter's for that.
Yeah, somebody Twittered this immediately.
Does Chris Anderson physically have a tail?
You win.
Does it, Matt? Did you meet him in person, or was it? Did you interview him?
I talked over the phone.
On the phone.
Can meet him at that overwhelming conference in Napa.
Yeah, the open source think tank, but that's like it's invitation only, right?
I can get invited. Come on. Yeah.
So when is that? That's in February. I'll put in Napa Valley, or is it end of January?
It's February 7th, 8th, and 9th.
Have you been to
More
that
important
before?
Napa Valley.
Have you
more
been to that before? Is that
no, I'm not going. No. More importantly, MuleCon, April 1st and 2nd, and we'll have our illustrious panel in real life.
Where is MuleCon?
It's going to be in San Francisco, and we'll have this very open season discussion with Jason Maynard as part of our program.
What can open season listeners get at MuleCon if they can demonstrate that they've listened to the show?
There'll be free t-shirts.
Free t-shirts, absolutely.
I'm not going to be on the panel if I don't get a t-shirt.
Other gadgets, all sorts of things. We'll get some that are less offensive for you, Matt, that you can wear in Utah.
Thank you.
Dave, have you been to the open source think tank conference before?
No, yeah, actually,
Adobe Dave.
We had a baby instead. I didn't.
Well, you could do that at the show. That's what they're trying to jazz it up this year. Is there actually live births and copulation?
Wow, that's big. That's the community model. The other Dave, did you go?
Yeah, I went last year, getting the invitation via, I think they invited our legal staff. It's actually one of the few shows that I'm looking forward to going to, simply because I don't have any marketing. I don't have anybody trying to sell me anything. And the topics, at least last year, the discussion groups led to changes in the way that Adobe approaches open source.
That's good. Legal stuff is great. There's no question about that.
It looked like they have workshops and stuff. It seemed like a different kind of conference.
Yeah, the structure last year was each group, or you get assigned to a group, and the group included all sorts of, you know, base level startups to college kids to, I think every table had at least one lawyer, large companies, there were CIOs present, all these things, you know, VC guys managed to work their way into this. And it was a really interesting spread. A topic was thrown out, your discussion group would go off and discuss it for 2 hours and come back, and you had 5 minutes to present. All the groups would present this functionality. And it was interesting to see how often the groups of diverse people would come to the consensus on a topic, you know, like a hybridism inside of companies, or discussions on how we approach resolving IPR problems inside of 35 open source licenses. Personal nightmare I deal with on a daily basis.
So you're thinking that maybe that we can thank the think tank for the GPL V3?
I personally can attest that you can thank them, because I'm the guy who stood up before poor Mark Radcliffe could get through page 2 of his presentation and went, "Are you out of your freaking mind?" And my issues, once again, go back to the statement that was in the version 2 or the flavor 2 of V3, which came out and said, if you grant a patent right to anybody, you have granted it in perpetuity to everybody, whether they sue you or not. I live in the standards world. Every standard has an IPR policy. Therefore, you as a company, if you decided to use ANSI C++, you've just given away your entire patent portfolio, whether it applied or not. So fortunately, that one got removed. There were a number of issues. The one that I would have loved to have seen in there was that SaaS should be considered as distribution, and it got removed in spite of my best efforts.
Yeah.
That would It's actually that part of the event. So I went to the first one. I didn't go to last year's, but I actually hated the little breakout groups. I hated having to like work and in the thing. And you end up, I remember getting in a fight with this, I was going to say bozo, but since he might be listening, with this nice gentleman from SAP, where he spent the whole time like basically saying open source is crap and you guys will never succeed. John Roberts, I think, was at my table, and we were both incensed that this numbskull was, with no understanding of open source, was in there talking about where it would go and whatnot. He had no understanding of how our companies were doing. And when we said, well, what about this company that bought this product for $500,000. Oh, that's a one-off. Nobody will ever pay a lot of money for open source. And he's just a complete
gentleman.
They're occasional jerks.
Say.
Doofus.
Yep. Yeah, and I didn't want to be in a small group with that bozo and like have to come to a consensus with him. I just wanted to take his head and cram it. Well, anyway, I'll stop.
Well, I'll flat out tell you that, you know, my group probably felt that way occasionally about me, because I was the guy who would grab other people and slam their head into the table. And you know, the poor guy, the guy from Sun Microsystems who was sitting next to me was part of their legal staff, and he was over there obviously trying to not say anything at all, and that's not acceptable. So if you're going to have a discussion group, everybody's got to contribute, at least even if they say they don't care. I expect to see something like that. But when that type of person, which we didn't have in our group the first day, the second day I did have one of those people in my group, it was a case of, you can choose to disagree with the consensus of the rest of the group, but it's time for you to shut up now. So somewhat is the moderation aspect of any type of working group. And I will admit that I don't go to conferences to be too lazy anymore. I just don't have enough spare cycles to do that. So this was a fun conference. Good wine, good food, and lots of very interesting people to talk with.
Speaking of lazy, this is the part where I have to bail out, and I'm going to go take the blessed child to go buy some cookies or something.
All right. She's not old enough to eat cookies, is she?
She's old enough to eat cookies, absolutely. We'll go to the donut store then, maybe get some coffee. This is it for me. It's always a pleasure, gents.
All right, man. We'll look out for your announcements next week.
Excellent.
Yep, thanks for inviting me.
All right, see you later.
Thanks, guys.
Matt, you're just upset that conference, they delayed your blogging schedule.
Oh, yeah, you were there at that event with me, weren't you?
Was that the same thing?
Yeah, it was the one, and I got in trouble for blogging it because I said this guy from SAP is an idiot, and I found out after the fact that I wasn't supposed to talk publicly about the secret things that went on. That's the other thing, is there's nothing really all that secret that goes on there, but it is good to be able to talk openly and whatnot, and then let people like me exercise their own discretion as to what we publish.
Yeah, they do have a line in here that says no public sharing of individual or specific remarks by others. And
that is a direct response to my doing so with the SAP guy.
That's weak. That is weak. You know what? Just before we wrap up the call, I wanted to follow up on something from the last show. We talked about, or at least Dave and Matt were speculating, that IBM might make this big Ubuntu play. And anyway, I took the liberty of getting an official comment from IBM that I thought we'd share with everyone. They said, "We're always open to additional partners for Linux and partner with Ubuntu and community and developer efforts. Currently, we have no plans to support them on our servers. If they garner sufficient share as measured in revenue of servers sold with Ubuntu Linux, we're always open to the idea of adding them or anyone else who gets customer traction." So I guess it's not a ringing endorsement for Ubuntu just yet, but if they did have something underway, I'm sure they wouldn't be telling me in the statement just now. Anyway, just wanted to clear that up because we did get most of our comments and emails were kind of about that whole IBM Ubuntu thing. Dave, is there anything, you know, on tap from Adobe coming in the next couple months, or anything people should keep an eye out for on, you know, just with regard to your open source work?
I know you watch the space.
I know you listened to a few things at the beginning, but I didn't know if there was something kind of near term you could talk about.
You'll actually see something coming out from us that would be significant for developers probably in every 2 to 3 months.
Okay.
So we just finished one in December, the Blaze DS product, distributed services product. And we have a couple of interesting things that will either hit in February or March. But I like the fact that my paychecks don't bounce, so I'm not going to tell you what they are.
Yeah, you should just test the theory. Matt, when's Alfresco Con?
Well, we have a community event on March 12th out in the Bay Area, but we aren't presumptuous enough yet to call it Alfresco Con. We just call it the Alfresco Community Event. Kind of low-key.
When's the Open Source Business Conference?
That is March 25th and 26th. It's actually going to be kind of cool this year. I mean, I quite liked it last year, but the thing that I'm looking maybe the most forward to is, well, A, we're going to have more end users, more IT executives out talking about how they're actually using open source. So everybody from, you know, PayPal, so maybe some of the usual suspects, to CBS and a range of companies that probably wouldn't normally get up on a podium to talk about open source, like Shimano, the gear maker and whatnot. It's kind of surprising to see how widely it's being adopted. But kind of the at the center of the show, and what I'm really looking forward to, is this Brad Smith, the general counsel of Microsoft, is going to keynote. And that's nice. He'll get up there and talk for 30 minutes about Microsoft's views on open source, both legal and otherwise. And then we have this panel with Mark Shuttleworth from Ubuntu and Andy Updegrove and one or two others actually interrogating him on open source IP issues. And then we open it up for the third half hour to the audience to be able to ask him questions. So I think by the end of that hour-long Q&A, both with the panel and then with the general audience, we should have a lot of data, I'm hoping new data, on how Microsoft feels about open source. Because it should be pretty interesting.
Yeah, that sounds like a good time. It's in San Francisco always, right?
In San Francisco, yeah, at the Palace Hotel.
Excellent. Well,
it's always fun watching Optic Robe work on things, by the way. Watching him ask people questions is just fascinating.
Yeah, no, that definitely sounds like a panel we're seeing. How many people usually go to that conference, Matt?
We get about, I don't know, 700 plus on average.
Yeah.
And about the, I mean, it's a, so the think tank is, in some ways, and I will say OSBC started before the think tank, but the think tank is similar in a way in that it tends to be senior people, senior execs that go. I don't know if your experience, I know, Dave, you said there were some students and whatnot, but I think the $1,500 price tag would keep most students from attending. But you get, so you'll get like Martin Mikos and John Roberts and whatnot there, and Dave and others. And then it's kind of the same thing at OSBC. I think it's, I'm trying to remember the number, something like 60% of the people there, 70%, 82% of the people there at the last conference had a director or above title. So you tend to get, you tend to get more senior people, and a fair number, a big swath of people actually have a CEO title at the event. So it's a good place to immerse yourself in, and to bump into Martin Mikos in the hall and have a conversation with them. I mean, it's, that's what I like about it.
Cool. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Dave, thanks. Special thanks for coming on the show. It's always nice to have a fresh perspective.
With no opinions, ever. Thanks for inviting me. I appreciate it.
And, you know, thanks to our listeners, as always, and we hope to see you soon in a couple weeks with a fresh show, as always. Fire your emails off to me, and we'll try to get any questions answered. I'd like to see a few more comments from you lazy bums out there. And with that, we're done with episode 9.